So let's get started then. I'm glad we've had such a big turnout of Olga and Phil. But to all of you who I hope are watching this on tape, this is the App Inventor for Android seminar. And we're going to start off, I'm going to talk about some of the more basic setup things that we do and how to work with App Inventor in a more like basic sense. And then we're going to transfer to Phil halfway through, and he's going to show some more complicated examples. So basically, let's begin by showing you App Inventor. So here we are on the App Inventor screen. It's in alpha still, so there are some kinks to be like ironed out. But let's create a new project. What I'm going to walk you guys through is a basic application that shows off some of the like components that can be used, how to set up a program for the phone that does some basic things and shows off some of the capabilities that like the phone has and that this programming language can allow you to do very easily. So let's call this spam me registered trademark, which also spells spammer if you're clever. And this application is going to allow you to spam me if you should download it. It's going to have a button that's going to place a phone call to me. There's going to be a button that allows you to send a text message to me. And then it's going to feature some funky images and some funky sounds and show you how to embed those in the code and generally like how those are used in the program. So let's get started with spammer. Uh-oh. Darn. Okay, spam me r. Apparently, you can't include parentheses in the name. Good to know. So, okay, we're given the screen, and this is the screen that you'll spend, I would say, half of your time on. You can imagine that related to or relative to Scratch, and this is a programming language that's generally it's going to be familiar because it's going to look like Scratch. This screen is kind of like the upper right corner of the screen in a Scratch environment. Where basically you would drag the sprites in initial setup, you would paint the background design. What you're going to be doing in this case is instead of sprites, you have a bunch of things on this palette. You can see right here there is a bunch of basic stuff. Welcome to our newcomers, we're just getting started. Where we have some basic things under the title of basic. There's a button, a surface for drawing on, checkbox, images, labels, password text boxes. You can imagine how all of these things would be used in an application on a phone. We're not going to get into most of these, but we are going to focus on a few in our application that we're going to make. You can change to other tabs to see that there's a bunch of other stuff that you can mess around with as well. There are different ways of playing sounds and videos. You can do some animation, stuff that I'm personally not going to talk or touch on today, but things that you can play around with. Socially speaking, there's a way to access the contacts on a phone. You can look through email addresses that you have stored in. And for those of you who are new to Android, once you like enter in your username, it automatically syncs all of your Gmail contacts and imports them all to your phone for you, which is really nice. Of course, you're left with no phone numbers, but the fun part is gathering those again. Group game, again, more complicated stuff. Phone call, that's something we're going to be using today. Texting is another thing that we're going to use in our demo application for today. There's access to Twitter built in, which is pretty cool. And there are actually some creative uses of this that Phil might touch on later on, ways to kind of like build in a search engine of sort or kind of simulate a database, you could say. There are some sensors. So this is something that I'll show you at the end of my half hour, how to deal with or how to use the accelerometer sensor. There's a location sensor, which is used in the Google Maps, which is built into your phone. Orientation sensor can tell you which way it's pointed. I've never used that, but that could be fun for like a lightsaber application. Just a thought. Screen arrangement. We're not going to touch on that, but if you've done any work in Java before, then some of this might look familiar to you. Other stuff. There's a barcode scanner, which was not here when I first looked at this, but that's very useful and also wicked cool. I'm not sure we're going to download. Well, I'll show this later on, how to use the barcode scanner, but it's one of the cool things about Android. Logger, Phil will touch on that maybe later on, how it can be used for debugging. Not ready for prime time, we have a tiny web database, which Phil will be touching on. Image picker, clock, and voting, not going to touch on yet, but there's a lot of cool stuff here to play around with. As far as old stuff goes, this is why my old programs weren't working, because SMS receiver is apparently a little outdated. And timer, again, not going to worry about it. But those are the basic components that we can use. You can think of them as different kinds of sprites. That you can drag onto the surface of the phone. So right here on the screen, we have screen one, which is our screen upon which we're going to be dragging components and such. So let's start. So again, I'll re-describe real quick what this program is going to do. It's going to feature a button that's going to have some text on it that says, well, I'm a Kimpossible fan. So it's going to say, call me, beep me if you want to reach me. If you don't know what Kimpossible is, don't worry about it. There's going to be a picture of me. Oh, shoot, we're using your computer now. Well, OK. There's going to be a picture of me, maybe, or of Phil. I don't know. There's going to be another button that allows you to send a text message to me. So again, effectively allowing you to spam me in every way possible. We could do an email one as well. We're not going to do that for now, for the sake of time. But let's start by dragging a few of these. OK, let's start with an image. So you just drag it onto the screen, just like in Scratch. And now we have an image right here. Let's also drag a button. Or actually, let me scroll back for a second to give you a sense of what a finished one looks like. So this will save automatically, or I'm going to hit save just in case. But Google is nice about auto-saving things. So we'll go back to projects. Here are other ones that I've done so far. Let's look. This is what it was ultimately going to look like. The picture is missing because it was on my local machine, and I'm now using a different computer. So this is what I was going to go for, something horrendously ugly, color scheme-wise, because I like being ugly in my applications. So OK, let's go back to Spammer, Spam-me-er. Let's go to the image, actually, to start, because I don't have any images anymore, unless Phil wants to come up and help me pick some funny ones. But let's start by dragging from media. No. Shoot, all of the sounds and stuff are not going to be there anymore. Or do you have Scratch installed?
Yeah.
OK, then we will be able to. Let's grab a sound. So a sound doesn't automatically, you don't see it kind of like puzzle piecing in anywhere on the screen. You actually have to scroll down to non-visible components, because a sound is not something that's going to show up on the screen. It's just something that you're kind of embedding. So we drag it down here, and now sound 2 kind of puts into place. So now we see here in components, we now have an image and a sound. So that tells us right here what things we have access to in our application. We'll see what this is doing behind the scenes for us in a moment when we open up the blocks editor with this button. Before we do that, let's look at a few more things we're going to include. Let's have a phone call. Put that up here at the top. It looks pretty boring right now. Let's also put in a texting thing. So image-wise, I'm going to now do something really, oh no, I'll let Phil avoid awkwardness. Any old picture. Actually, if you could add 3 pictures, that would be awesome. So now that we've worked out this little picture mishap, we have access to this nice Google logo for the day of Ernie and Bert. And this is going to be our default that we're going to start with. Now, when you hit the phone call 2 button to make a phone call on the phone, I'm going to just, one of the things we're going to code is we're going to switch the picture to one of the other two. And when we do text for texting to, when we click on the texting button, it's also going to switch to a different picture, just to kind of illustrate the kind of things that you can do behind the scenes. So let's look at what we can do for image 2. So if I click on image 2, well, it offers to delete it. Here we see the properties of image 2 over here on the right. There are only 4 things we can change. There's the ID, which is what's going to allow us to kind of get a handle on this component from within the blocks editor, which is the meat of kind of Android programming. There's the picture itself, the source. Then there's width and height, which we can adjust to either fill the parent, meaning it can fill whatever like subform or whatever it's in. So in this case, if I were to change the width to fill parent, you can see how it expanded to kind of contain the or fill the entire screen, that red bar expanded to the right. We can also set a custom number of pixels. Let's just keep it like this for now. Height-wise, I'm going to make them really prolonged because I'm cruel. So it defaults to what the current value is. I'm going to make it like 248. Oh, that's boring. But OK. Now at least the buttons are spread out a little more. So let's now look at the more interesting ones. This is just a picture. It's static for now. But let's look at text for phone call 2, or not text, phone call 2, the phone call component that we've added, and also the texting component we've added. Let's do the phone call 1 first. So here we can, again, change the ID, but we can keep it like this for now, because we know we only have 1 phone call going on here. The phone number, I'm going to put my own, 1617-365-7700. We're going to enable this phone call component. We don't need an image, just because we're going to keep this kind of as it is. Background color, let's make it a very pretty button with black background. We'll make it bold and italic and font size 16 and fault face, whatever. text for phone call 2. So this is what it's going to say on the button on the screen. So let's say, make the phone call. And the text color, so we can actually see it, will be cyan, because I like it. And it's centered. So as you can see, it's not actually showing like the formatting that we're doing right now. It's updating the colors and stuff, but it's not centering it, for example, even though I've specified that I want it to be centered. Now, if I hit preview here, then it'll show me a little bit more accurate portrayal of what I'm going to see on the phone, except it's still not centering it. This is why it's an alpha. So it's not totally working yet, but you can kind of get a better sense. You can also see that this down here looks more like a button, the texting button right now. We're going to change it so that it looks like the one above it, but that's what the kind of default button looks like, not so much this square boring box. So that's really all we need to do for this phone call component. So once we're able to interact with the phone call component later on inside of the box editor, when someone clicks this button, the default behavior is to make the phone call, actually, and to call the number in phone number. So theoretically, if I were to click on the button inside the application on my phone, it would call me. I'm not sure what that's going to do, like in terms of phone networks and stuff. I don't know if I can call myself, actually, but we'll find out. So now let's do the same kind of setup for our texting thingy. So texting 2 is fine. Phone number, let's again do mine. And message. So this is something that you can adjust kind of on the fly. You can have a text box as one of these components where you could type in something and then have that be stored through your what you're actually programming that you're going to do to kind of set the message field of a text of your like texting component to whatever they type in. So over here, if we look in basic, you can imagine how you could use a text box, one of these, and then allow the user to open up their phone and type something on the phone and then hit enter, and you could kind of parse whatever they give you, set or message field in your texting component to whatever they typed in, and then send that text message. This will become more clear when we actually look at the blocks editor, but this is kind of showing you the properties that the texting like has. For right now, we're just going to hard code it. So whenever I click this button, it's not going to give me a choice to what I want to text to this number. It's always going to text what I type right now, just for simplicity's sake. So let's make it the demo is working. Hopefully, I will be receiving a lot of these texts in the near future. Receiving is enabled. We'll just keep it like that. Texting is enabled. Alignment center, fine. Image, we're not going to do an image again. Background color, let's also make it black. This time we'll make the text green so that we know it's different. And this will be text messages are fun too. So let's also make it bold and bigger. Fun. They are fun. So now we have our basic components in place for this really easy program. At this point, we can open the blocks editor. So it's opening the blocks editor. Is this OK? What just happened may vary based on what like operating system you're using and what browser you're using. But generally, something like this, a Java web start should start running. You should say, OK, it's OK. And this will pop up. This should look like Scratch. So this is like the Scratch part of it. We have a bunch of other things to go over now. So these are your general kind of blocks that you can move around. They're kind of all the ones that are built in, like on the left sidebar for your Scratch thing, like the while loop buttons, and they look very similar as well. So if I click on definition here, it's a little more complicated than Scratch, just because the names are a little more ambiguous. But this has to do with procedures, which are basically like functions of their own, which you can define. And you can define variables, different things. There's some stuff already built in for text. Lists are something that you can use here, which is something that was missing until recently in Scratch. I think you had access to it this year, to lists, that is. There's a bunch of stuff that you can do with math. You can do addition, subtraction, test for equality, define some new numbers. Logic allows you to use Boolean stuff. Control-wise, you have if, else, and other kind of conditionals. You can also loop while. You can do a for each loop. And then colors just allow you to mess with some visual stuff. So given everything that I just showed you, you can't do a whole lot with that that's interesting. So that allows you to kind of change some general characteristics of your program, But what's most interesting is when you now click over to My Blocks. So it defaults to show you the built-in blocks, but if I click on My Blocks, it scrolls over to here. So now we have My Definitions, which is for the moment empty, but you can see we have Phone Call To, Image To, Texting To, and Sound To. Now, these correspond to those names, those IDs, of the components that I dragged in on that previous editor, as you might recall. So if I move this over a little bit and go back here, you can see we have Phone Call To, Image To, Texting To, Sound To. If I open this back up, so this is each of those components carries with it a set of built-in blocks that are more interesting because they actually allow you to define the behavior of those components. So for my phone call, for example, it has its own like phone call specific blocks, which are more interesting. So you can say before call, which is kind of, if I click the phone call thing, this is saying you can do some behavior before it actually places the phone call. Here we have got focus that has to deal with like whether you're clicking on it or scrolling over it on the phone surface. Initialize lets you do something before it gets pressed, if you want to like set it to a different picture or something. Lost focus, again, just like get focus. Make phone call. We won't actually need this because it's kind of built in to the behavior. When you click the button, the default behavior is to make the phone call, but this allows you to make a phone call from somewhere else in the code. And then there's a bunch of stuff here that allows you to modify all of the fields that I went over in the setup process. So you remember there's enabled, you can set the background color, you can change the font being bold or italic using these set commands. You can also access what the current state of those fields is using these like right side of the puzzle piece pieces. And you can edit all sorts of stuff. The current image associated with the phone call. And this basically represents a phone call in Android. Same kind of deal applies with image too. You can change, it doesn't have so many functions associated with it because images are kind of by nature basic. It just has height, you know, what picture is associated with it, width, x, y dimensions, that kind of thing. Texting is kind of like a phone call. You have initialize. You can deal with received messages, which is kind of a little more advanced than what a phone call would allow you to do. We're not going to deal with that because we're sending them for now. But okay. And finally, sound too. We have kind of what you would expect. You can pause a sound, play a sound, resume a sound after it's been paused, stop a sound. You can cause the phone to vibrate. This one is very fun. And I actually coded an application earlier on that kind of bypassed the silent mode for your phone by vibrating when it receives a text message if you had it set on silent. So you can kind of code in little hacks for your phone all on your own. Okay, let's start coding our application then. A lot of the behavior is already kind of built in because it's by nature a very simple application that we're doing. But let's do some stuff with the phone call. Let's say before a call. So after they click on a button, you can see these little things show up, which is why this is nicer than Scratch. It allows you to look at all of those built-in blocks from right here. So this is nicer than having to scroll back and forth between my blocks and the built-in blocks. And you have to click again here to kind of bring this palette back out. But in general, it's fairly streamlined in terms of placing these blocks down. And they'll all kind of snap together nicely, just like Scratch blocks. So OK, we have this before call going on. Oh, sure. So we have phone call 2, which is our component, and then our before call event. So this is whenever a phone call gets placed, this is going to happen before we place the phone call. So what are we going to do? Let's change the picture that we have in the middle of our screen, which currently is this guy, Ernie and Bert. So instead of Ernie and Bert, what other pictures do we have access to? We have, oh, this is going to be ugly. Well, we have phil.jpg, which is nice. So if a phone call is made, let's change the picture to be phil.jpg. So we can go into the image 2's palette and say set image 2 picture 2. And now we can define as a string. It just happens to be a string. Source file to associate it with now. So we can change this to be the file name, phil.jpg. So now when a phone call is made, it's going to change that picture on the phone right before it makes the phone call to the picture of Phil. Do something similar with, actually let's add a sound as well. Sound to play. And we haven't defined what sound to is yet, but let's do that right now. Sound to Bert, no. Okay, so we haven't defined a source for this sound yet. Let's do so right now.
Go into the Scratch.
Right. So it should be my computer, I believe, and program files. Okay. Scratch. And we're going to scratch because I really like this sound. Human. Let's do laughmail 3, actually. We'll save the big finale for last. Actually, let's do sneeze mail. It's more fun. So we have this sound file added in now. Let's set the minimum interval. This is in milliseconds. Let's just set it to 3,000. I won't explain this for now. Well, no, it's basically, if you were to be caught in a loop where you're playing this sound, it's going to wait now 3 seconds before like playing it again. So you won't hear one of those like endless loops that you've all gotten used to from the Scratch labs, where it plays a sound like a bazillion times in 1 second. This is going to play it once every 3 seconds at most. So, okay, now we have this sound too. It has a source, so now we'll play its source here. Let's also add, I know I'm running low on time. Let's also add an event to switch the picture back to Ernie and Bert if the text is made. So when texting before send, so this is going to be a very basic example, I guess. Let's go back in the image, find its set picture to. Image to picture to. It's going to look very similar. What should we set it to? I have to check the name of the file again. Image has Bert Ernie-HP GIF. So we'll grab another text thing. Bert Ernie, and I totally forgot if it was an underscore. Was it an underscore first? I think it was. HP.GIF. I'll drag this down so we can see it a little better. I'm just going to check this to make sure I got it right. Oops. Ah, wrong. Where did...
The box is the very far. Yeah, it's good.
Okay, sweet. Bert underscore Ernie dash HP. Okay. So we have Bert underscore Ernie dash HP.GIF. And let's play the sound again. Just because we really like that sound. Okay. So you see it just automatically saved for us. Google's nice like that. And we have a working program, albeit one that's going to be really annoying for me. So let's go back here. So we have like a working program. We have our two buttons that are associated with a phone call and a text. Let you what?
So I can install a microphone.
Oh, sure. So this button will be associated with a phone call. This one is associated with a text. And this is what's going to reflect what we did last. So let's package it for the phone. This is going to blow your mind. So we say package for phone, show barcode. We can also download to this computer. That's boring, though. So let's show barcode. It's now packaging. Now, here, if you can zoom over here for a second, Phil and I are now going to download this application magically. So on my phone, I have an application already called a, well, not called. It's a barcode scanner. He has his open right now. So as soon as the barcode shows up on the screen, as you'll see up there, actually, I wonder if I can do it from the screen itself. That would be awesome. You try from the computer, or you try from the screen, and I'll try from the computer.
So once you download, you need to download this from the market. It's the barcode scanner just application. Just search for barcode scanner.
Mine is called ScanLife, for your information. And you'll need one of these.
All you do then is, when you get these barcodes.
Did you get it?
Yeah.
Awesome.
You just basically point your phone at it.
There's a camera built in.
And
so
then it'll bring you to a link.
So basically, there's a link embedded inside the barcode that allows you to get a direct download to the application packaged up for your own phone. So actually, each of you could do this right now if you wanted to with your phone. Don't, because I don't want you all calling me. But OK, I'm going to do the same thing now. So I open up my scanner application. I'll hold it in front of the computer. Your roommates are going to think you're really weird, but it's cool. I got mine too. So now again, it opens a link. Oh, mine's making lots. I don't have any network on my phone. So are you able to download yours?
I have Wi-Fi, but I don't have network. So it's not actually going to be able to call.
OK, so he at least was able to download the application. Mine was able to find the link and not download it. Luckily, I have a version of this application on my phone already, because this is the second time I've made it. So let me open that up. And we're going to show exactly how it works. And I'll show this to the camera, because it's different from what we see up there. OK. So once you've gotten a good look at it, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to click on this button, which is going to call me. You heard that laugh?
Yes.
Oh no, I'm not on the network. Dang it, dang it, dang it. Well, I actually hard-coded this application to call Phil, but my prank call just failed because I don't have any reception. But, ah, dang, that was the whole point of this presentation, to prank call Phil. But I did it in spirit. But effectively, that's what it's doing. It's changing the picture around, and it's sending out a text message or sending out a phone call. So that's generally like how you would do an application. So this application uses the accelerometer. There's an accelerometer inside the phone that allows you actually to open it up right here. And actually, I just changed over here, so this is what the application kind of looks like. But if you go back to the box editor, whoa, magically it already changed to reflect which project we had to have open. So we don't have to reopen it, re-download it, all that stuff. So you can kind of see what code is happening, kind of. We'd have to scroll down. This is a little bit more complicated, but effectively we're checking the Z accelerometer, or Z acceleration components of the accelerometer. And then we're checking, we're switching some text around, as you can see. We're messing with some variables. And we're playing some sounds. So see if you can guess what happens. OK, that's enough. So did you hear that? Do it again. Pass. So this is Screamer. It's perfect for annoying your roommates like a lot. Because basically, it doesn't have to be tossed up in the air. You can also do this. And it just kind of screams next to their ear. So with that, I finish my presentation and defer to Phil, who's going to show you some more useful and complicated things to do with App Inventor.
Hi, so I'm Phil Zembowitz. I'm another one of the TFs. And I'm going to present a few more advanced topics. Now, these aren't things that you necessarily need to do, but they sort of showcase more of the features of Android as a system, sort of from the basis of App Inventor. So sort of using a Scratch-like interface to do more complicated things that you can't even do in Scratch, really. The one exciting thing about this I like to sort of point out is that you are participating in something that's completely new. Never before has there been a way to program for phones that you can do things so quickly and without so much knowledge of the actual hardware of the phone. So this is pretty exciting. And whatever experiences you do have with this will be listened to by Google and will help in sort of developing this further. This is a beta test right now, or an alpha, actually. So it's sort of very pre-production. And what you say actually will have a large impact on how the software is later developed. So that's just the logo for Android, which I think is pretty neat. So the first thing is that there's a sort of, I'm not going to have that much graphics, there's going to be a lot of text, but I'll just explain it. So while App Inventor is quite powerful in and of itself, I mean, it was pretty cool to just be able to use a barcode to get the program onto my computer. If you want to do more advanced things, it's sort of useful to have the actual SDK or software development kit installed on your phone. And that's available at this website. It's just if you search for Android SDK, from there you can download for either Mac or Windows or Linux a development kit for Android. Now this will sort of give you all of the necessary things if you want to do the Java programming, which is one thing that you might want to do later on once you experience Android more and more. But there's a really important tool called ADB, which lets you move files to and from your computer between the phone. So installing the SDK will let you do things like transferring, just plugging it in via USB, like I have here. I've just plugged my phone in via USB, and I can actually access things and update them as necessary. So one important thing that you do using the USB cable is actually updating to version 1.5 or the most recent version 1.6 of the Android OS. So what your phones have is actually 1.0 right now, which is sort of quite old. Doesn't have an on-screen keyboard. A lot of things have changed since the phone first came out. So upgrading is a very important thing. Now, by the way, I'll post these slides up somewhere. probably on the actual App Inventor Wikimedia page for CS50. So you can actually get these links from me later. But basically, installing the SDK and using the USB interface will allow you to upgrade your phone, which is better for you because you'll have more features too. And if you just follow these instructions, so using the recovery image method and using ADB to copy to and from your phone will allow you to upgrade. Now, I mentioned that ADB is the most useful tool. If you actually install the SDK, you can do very many things. I mean, if you just type it in with no parameters, you see that it does very many different things, like just passing commands to the phone, getting its serial number, viewing device logs, and so forth. But for one of the most sort of elementary things that you'll do is just type in ADB devices. And that will give you a list of all the devices that are connected to your computer at the time. So this is my phone's ID number, and it's just listing it as it's connected right now. So I'll go in and do some more interesting things with this later. So returning back to talking about App Inventor, there's actually a really useful thing you can do in App Inventor. It's called logging. So the development cycle in App Inventor is kind of slow. I mean, you have to sort of wait for it to package, for that barcode to show up, to actually download it, to install it. It'll take around a minute and a half before you get your actual program on your computer from when you commit it. And that's kind of painful if all you're trying to do is find what's the right, you know, Z value for this image when it's moving across the screen and so forth. So there's a block in the blocks editor called the logger under, I think it's other, so we can actually check it out right now. This is a program I've been working on. It's a little more complicated than Alex's program, but I'll just throw in, the logger is actually under other stuff, and we can add a logger to the program. Now, I've already added one previously, as you see here in the list of components, and the logger doesn't have any properties. All it has is an ID. Now you wonder, like, you know, it's another one of these things you don't see, right? You don't actually ever use directly. But what you can do in the text editor is, if you ever have some sort of question about, you know, what is a particular value at a particular time, Logger has two powerful kind of tools that let you read out some such values quickly. It's sort of like doing printf in C. When you need to check, okay, I'm in a loop, how many times have I gone through this loop, you can sort of printf the index and see where exactly your mistake's occurring and so forth. So if you go to my blocks, which is sort of everything that I've chosen and their associated functions, and I find logger, it's all the way down here at the bottom, I can see that there are sort of two calls that logger can do. Sorry, I'll just move it out of the way so it's easier to see. You can do display, and you can do log. So what display does, and I won't actually show it for interest of time for moving through this stuff, what display does is it pops up a little message box with whatever value you're passing in at the end here. So for example, what I'm going to do right now is, if I just want to say, like, you know, starting, right, logger will actually bring up this little message box that says starting every time this actually happens. So when I click what's called search button that I've set up previously. So logger is really useful for actually getting to the root of your problem if you have problems that you can't solve. So by the way, to remove blocks from the block editor, you just have to drop them into the trash can here at the bottom. Now, the other function of logger is log, so logger1.log. And what this will do is it sort of outputs these values in a more subtle way, in a way that you access through ADB, the tool that I mentioned earlier. So if we log things here, we'll get particular messages from ADB's log file reader. So I'll just show you what that is soon. So I've already actually compiled this application and put it on my phone. Now that my phone's plugged in, I can do this really neat thing. And the command is ADB log cat. And I don't know why it's, log, view or something. And basically, you get all these crazy messages, right? But what this actually is, and now if I start using my phone, you can actually sort of see all of the things that are happening on my phone at a given time. So I'm here, checking my email, scrolling around. And you can see things like individual, for example, memory freeze. So just like in C, there's a free command, right? You can see that in the background, Android is freeing memory that's no longer needed and so forth. Now, a lot of this doesn't make sense. It doesn't even make sense to me. I haven't spent that much time in the actual Java environment to understand a lot of this. But this is actually where those logger.log values will come out. So if I start my application, I've actually not included it in this version, sorry. But when I do things here, it should log things and actually display them. So there'll be an actual message that will give you a value that you've specified, so you can actually see. Now, this is really kind of complicated and kind of messy, but if you can actually use this logger to get particular values out, you can see in real time how numbers change and how things are acting. So this is cool, yeah. Like you can, for example, see I have a weather application, and it's currently downloading something, right? The low temperature tonight, apparently 8 degrees. That's terrible. But this is neat if you want to sort of get kind of deep into the sort of actual workings of the phone. Now I'll come back to this in a little bit when I talk about starting other activities. So that's Logger. It's quite useful. It's you'll learn a lot from using it. So as just for review, there's the display method, right? So you can give a little pop-up note on the phone, and the other version is log, which can be accessed by ADB logcat, and that'll actually give you the values sort of while the phone executes. So real-time logging is pretty neat. Very few places you can actually get something like that. So I showed you guys the log file. It's kind of messy. I think actually in this version, you can see it did print that message that I had earlier. So I can actually read out, and it's development tools. You can actually see, okay, it's started. I know that my program has reached that place in execution. And another thing you can do is, as I mentioned here, you can put in dash F on this statement, so ADB logcat dash F, and I'll actually save it to a file so you can look through it later if you can't see anything, something immediately. As a sort of, advertisement, there are some useful apps you might find cool for Android now that you have them. One of my favorites is actually ConnectBot, which is basically just like SSH. So you can SSH into NICE, you can SSH into cloud, do all of your problem sets basically on your phone. So it's really cool. If you have a website and you notice that something's wrong, you can just go in and change it immediately without having to go to an actual computer. Which is pretty cool. And the other one that's really useful for development is called Task Killer, or something related to that. I forget the actual name. But what this allows you to do is kill a process on the phone that's sort of taking up too much memory or you don't want around anymore. If you've spent some time coding on Android or just using Android thus far, you'll see that it's hard to actually really close something, right? What Android does is it handles memory and it sort of watches its stack grow. But then as the stack grows too high and you're sort of running low on memory, it'll kill off applications that you've used It's a queue, basically. So it kills off the applications that are used the furthest back in time. So it, you know, sometimes it'll actually close things that are, you know, useful to you without your consent, but it does that in an effort to conserve memory. Now, sometimes you'll just want to close something when you want to, and this will actually list them and allow you to kill them. And this will actually be integrated in the next version of Android in the OS itself. But for now, there are some applications that do that. Anyway, back to App Inventor. What's cool now is, as Alex showed earlier, you can load images from your computer and display those. But as we saw, that's kind of tedious, and you have to like retype the image, the names, and so forth. But with the new version, which is actually RC6, there's a typo there. You can actually get images from the net, so you don't actually have to store anything on your phone, which is cool for two reasons. If you have a lot of images, you don't have to actually store them and download them and so forth. And another thing is, if you need to change an image once you've already given out your application to people, you can just change the online version and everyone will get the new one instead of worrying about, you know, sending out a new application to everyone. So I just like to, you know, tell you guys that, that something like this exists. So one of the coolest things recently that's come around in App Inventor is the activity starter. So a lot of things in Android are coded. So I've mentioned this word activity a few times. And an activity is sort of Android slang for a program. So something that does something. And it can have many different views, right? So a view is a particular interface that a user sees. So for example, in the Gmail application, you'll have one view that's, you know, your inbox, and you can scroll through it and so forth. But you'll have another view that's composing a message, for example. But that the total sum of that is called an activity. That's the Gmail activity. Now, what's cool about Android is you don't necessarily, if you want to use Maps or if you want to use Gmail in one of your applications, you don't have to recode Maps or Gmail or so forth. You can just start it from your own application. So if you wanted, for example, have a user choose a location on a map and then just give you those coordinates back, you don't have to worry about recoding all that in the first place. So there's actually a way to do this from App Inventor, which is really powerful, because you can get a lot of the phone's functionality without having to know exactly how to use, you know, the Maps API or anything like that. So Activity Starter is basically what you need. And it's I think it's under... Let me see where it is in the... So Activity Starter is also under Other Stuff. And as you see, it's another one of these components. Or actually, Activity Starter is a button. So if I drag a new Activity Starter, just like the text or the phone, applications, right? Or components, they're they have a default activity, which is to start that. So I'm going to just delete this real quick. I think we're going to go over a little bit, if that's okay. Yeah. Okay, I mean, it'll probably be like 15 minutes more. So the activity starter, where was I? Okay, so it allows you to launch a new activity on top of your own application. Now, let me just get to it on the... So if I look at its parameters, right? Basically, let me just introduce this application I'm working on. It's a drug reference application. So if you if you're interested about a particular pharmaceutical, you can just type in the name, and it'll access a database and give you some information about it. And this activity starter I'm designing here basically allows the user to view that entry in a sort of drug database on the browser so that they can get more information if they want to. Now, this is kind of confusing, and to be quite honest, I only figured this out this afternoon, so I don't know how much I'll be able to tell you about this, but basically, the way I figured this out, I'll actually just say the way I figured it out. Android has these things called intents, which are basically these little wrappers like, wrappers for something you want to start. So if you want to have an activity, it needs an intent, which is sort of like, okay, you're going to start this new activity. there's a lot of, you know, jargon in Android programming. And an intent has an activity that's associated with it. And the activities are within packages. And there's a class inside of that package that is actually implementing what the activity does. Now, this is kind of confusing, but let me just demonstrate on logcat. So for example, what I'm going to do right now is, let me just get back to my main home screen. For example, if I hit browser, now a bunch of stuff happened, basically, right? Hopefully this will stop pretty soon. So I just hit browser on my home screen. All I did is opened the activity that's called browser. Now, you know, if you kind of, stop doing this, please. If we look around here, let me just do it again so that it doesn't, so it's fresh. So if I look here, right, and there's this thing called Activity Manager that occasionally pops up, right? And if you see, I hit browser and it says starting activity, intent, right? So that's what we might want to copy into our intent, right? It's action, right? So the action of the intent is android.intent.action. That might not be the right one. Anyway, you'll see things like this, where it's, you know, android.intent.action.main, or dot, you know, browser, or dot, you know, Google, or dot, you know, you have to kind of use some sort of heuristic to figure out what this is, right? And then here you'll get, where's the actual, yeah, yeah. So, and here you'll actually get the component, right, which is what comp stands for. And you'll actually see that it's com.android.browser, which is a package, right? And within that, it'll be com.android.browser.browserActivity is the actual class. Now, it's kind of like experimental at this point how you figure these out. You can actually go into the documentation for Java and kind of figure these out in a smarter way. But the way I've been doing it is just kind of like this. So basically, I've given you two examples that are pretty powerful in the PowerPoint. So if we actually want to start a Google search, right? The action is android.intent.action.search. And then the package and the class are as written here. So it's com.android.googlesearch and com.android.googlesearch/googlesearch. And you basically just fill out activity starter with those values. And then there's this thing called extra key and extra value, which is what that actual activity receives as sort of parameters. So just like in C, you're passing parameters to functions, and they did things differently based on that. Here, the key is query, right? So that's what we're gonna say that, okay, we want some results, we want to search, right? And the extra value will actually be what you want to search for, right? Similarly, if we want to open a website, there's some similar things. You also actually use search because it's done the same way in Android, but the class and package are the browser class. This is actually mistyped. I'll change it on the file I upload. So if we see how we can work these in the actual Blocks Inventor, so for example, there's this thing where I get some information. Basically, it's pretty complicated, but here we'll be able to understand what's going on. So when I get some data back, and I want my first thing to search for or to look at a particular web page, right? I can set from the activity starter blocks, right? If we go down to the bottom, we can actually change the parameters, right? So Alex was changing bold, italic, and so forth. But we can change that value for extra value, which is the actual search term or the address term, right? So I change it to a particular database's web address, joined with a value that I know is going to give me a valid HTML address. So that basically changes the target of that activity, right? So this will open a browser and point it to this, right? Because I've set it up in here to be a browser activity starter. Now, I'll try to figure out a few more of these and just give them to you so that you can use things like maps and so forth. I mean, I haven't quite figured this out, and to be honest, this is quite new to me as well. But this will be really powerful. I mean, I envision, you know, opening something up so a user chooses on a map where something occurs, and then you can actually return it back to the application. So I'll post these up so you guys can play around with them as well. So this is all really hackish, the way I've done it right now, but it's quite fun to kind of figure it out. And you can get results from Activity Starter. So once you open an activity, just like in normal Android apps, right, if you get, you know, if you have a map within another activity, right, and if you hit back enough times, you'll end up coming back to that original activity, right? And the map maybe was changed and the user put another address there or so forth. So you can actually get the result of what the user chose, right? So if you started like if you went into contacts, for example, and you know chose a contact, you can actually get the result. So you can actually do stuff with that return value, which I haven't actually done yet, but this exists, hence the blocks being empty, because I haven't figured out this yet. But so the last thing I'm going to go over is this like really, really promising and really difficult thing called TinyWebDB, which basically lets you store your own values in a database online that your phone can then access. So this was created by Hal Abelson, an MIT professor who's sort of working with us, because he wanted to allow developers to not only have to hard code all of their data into the phone app, but to actually have phones that gather it from phones that access it in an online way. So as I write here, it's currently very primitive and hackish, but you can actually do pretty cool things with it as is. So TinyWebDB, this is the sort of workflow of TinyWebDB, which is really complicated. So you have your phone, and inside of it, there's a TinyWebDB component. So it's one of these app inventor blocks is called TinyWebDB. And TinyWebDB has a few different activities. So I'll show you those in the actual block editor. Zoom out a little bit. So, zoom in, please. Thank you. So here, for example, in the middle of this, so when I click my search button, I have TinyWebDB get a value. So the model with which TinyWebDB works, right? And if you hover over these, it explains what these blocks actually do, which is quite useful if you don't know. But TinyWebDB basically asks, OK, go to the server, get a value for this particular tag. So the model of TinyWebDB is that in your database, you're going to have tags and you're going to have values. So it's kind of primitive. It's kind of like a MySQL database with two columns, or an Excel spreadsheet with two columns. One column will have like an ID number, and another column will have like a name, for example. That's sort of how you can do it right now. That's as complicated as you can really get. But if you kind of improvise and come up with interesting ways to store your data, you can actually get quite a few different data points for an individual entry. But so this call basically goes to the database and searches for a particular text, right, which was in my search input, which is a text input block. So I've created this, you know, using the sort of simpler blocks. But basically, this thing is called. And the way that you actually get a value back is you have this what's known as a listener function. So this basically is like you can think of it as a when statement. It says when here. So when TinyWebDB gets a value, so basically when the server responds, it responds with the tag, which is what you searched for, and the value from the WebDB, which is actually what the value at that particular place is. So you can imagine looking through a list of IDs, finding your particular ID, and then returning back the ID and the name associated with that. For example, if you're trying to have a login of some sort. In my case, I'm just looking up the name of a particular pharmaceutical here. So let me just go forth. So that's a sort of tiny WebDB within App Inventor itself. So you see it sort of it called the server, and then it got back values from the server. And you can play with those there. So it, when it returns, it just returns text, which you can do whatever you want with. For example, what I do with it is, as I showed earlier, I have my activity starter point to one of the results by joining together the result I get from TinyWebDB with an HTML address, and then I can actually point my phone to open up a browser pointing to something. So I'll just quickly go over the back end of this. This is sort of like the most advanced stuff, and also I've kind of figured out in the past few days. But it's really cool because you can start to create a really big database with very kind of minimal effort. So what you can actually do is use either MySQL or comma-separated values, so CSV files, and you can load up this data store that's on the server that you can then access with TinyWebDB. Now, TinyWebDB is actually hosted by Google App Engine. Seeing as this is Google Android and Google App Inventor, it's fitting that it's hosted on Google App Engine. Now, App Engine is this little service that allows you to create little web applications that can be accessed from any internet accessible device that can be written in Python or Java, and Android can access these. So if you're not comfortable with Python or Java, then sort of, disregard this. But there's a lot of cool stuff you can do. So what Hal ended up doing is, I don't have it here. Android, I'll just show you mine. So I've, hopefully it's working. Oh, there we go. This is Hal's actual web page. So this is the sort of back end of this. And if you don't want to sort of change it too much more, you don't need to do too much. But basically, if you sign up for, if you go to App Inventor and or App Engine and sign up for an account, basically an extension of your Google account, you can create these pages that are sort of web services and that you can use your phone with. There are some instructions that Hal provides in the documentation on how to clone this for yourself and then create your own database using this. So the way this works, and you can, for example, Hal has some entries on, how to change the number of entries that this database can hold and so forth. But the way this works is this basically just, as you see, there's a key, right, or what's known in App Inventor as a tag, and a value, right? So if I, got the value for Kelsey, I would get cheese rules. I don't know, who put that there. So basically, you can see that there's all this data here. And the way that it's actually added and stored, and I mean added and got, is these functions called get value and store a value, right? So if we store a value, App Inventor, sometimes, oops, doesn't work. And if we go back to the server, somewhere here, we see App Inventor sometimes doesn't work, what I just added. And if I had a WebDB component that was accessing this App Engine location, it could actually get that value out from here. So if I go back to the blocks editor, or the actual layout, I see TinyWebDB, and let's just look at its parameters. So the only thing that it actually does is it has a service URL. So once you set up one of these App Engine components, you'll have your own sort of web address that will host this web service, and then TinyWebDB will have that stored, and you can just access it using that. So when TinyWebDB does something like get value, it just calls, get value. Basically, what it does is it actually calls this with a particular tag that you pass it in App Inventor, and it will get you that value, which is kind of neat because it's sort of bridging the gap between what's on the phone and what's actually online, which is quite useful. So the actual back end, so this is some information I'll share with you on how to set up App Engine if you're interested in this back end. And you can basically modify HAL's App Inventor TinyWebDB, which you can download from the documentation page of TinyWebDB. Now, there's actually a very good sample application of TinyWebDB that will teach you a lot about how it works. So Google Data Store is actually what powers the sort of database itself. It's kind of terrible. It's kind of like MySQL. You do things like select star from, et cetera, or insert into blah, blah, blah. But it's a mess because unlike SQL, which is a relational database, which means that there's an entry and there's a particular set of relations that it has or particular attributes, or for example, a name and then like a few categories or whatever. Everything that's in Google Data Store can have a different number of attributes. So you can have something that just has one attribute, you can have something that has like 10, so forth. We're only interested in something that has a tag and a value because that's how TinyWebDB works right now. But basically, Google Data Store is a sort of back-end database that does this. And there's a way to upload CSVs directly into Data Store. So this shouldn't be a slide because it's kind of a mess. But if you go to this address, which I'll, again, post up, it'll sort of step you through uploading data with a CSV file to Data Store. So if you have some application you'd like to develop, for example, you know, a list of your favorite restaurants around Cambridge, and then you want to have an App Inventor thing that gets their addresses and shows them on a map all together and then allows you to comment on them or, you know, whatever. If you have some data that you want to use on a phone, this is probably one of the best ways to do it because you can change it on the fly. It's pretty quick once you actually create a CSV file to upload it to the data store, and from there you can create really cool applications. So maybe later I'll actually show my application to the video up close, and we can see what the power of it is. But the thing is, like with these, it's sort of like the Google APIs. They're very well documented. In this week's problem set, you'll see the Google Maps API. It's kind of obscure at times, but then again, everything is very well documented. There's great examples as well. So this is definitely one of those things that if you're interested in, you kind of need to, you know, self-teach a bit. And you know, what's most important is sort of understanding this model. And if you want to, you can just copy HAL's version over and just use the App Inventor and TinyWebDB as is and not worry about this. But if you want to create like a huge database that you access from your phone, you can actually delve into this. You don't really need to know Python that much. You can just sort of follow the tutorials that they have online, and you can upload like a huge database. So for example, the database I'm running now has around 18,000 entries, which would be very difficult to just code into App Inventor itself. And I think that's it for what I have. So what I really recommend, if you want to get into these more in-depth App Inventor things, is the sample applications that are on this website that you can reach from the documentation within Android Blocks and the App Inventor. So if you go in the actual design window, if you go to help up here, the documentation, it's a bit sparse, so it makes this very, you know, experimental, but what they do have is a very good sample application for TinyWebDB. So this will actually guide you through, I'm getting a phone call. This will actually guide you through how to create, how to sort of clone HAL's App Engine site. How to actually create a layout. So for example, his is very simple. You either store something and then you can get it later. And it actually goes through the functions of WebDB itself. So I recommend that. And yeah, email me if you have any questions, because I've kind of spent a bunch of time playing around with this. And I guess that's it. If you guys have any questions that you feel are, I mean, it's kind of out there, but do you guys have any questions? If that, we'll break up for a little bit. Yeah?
Let's say I have an application that uses images. Mm-hmm. Can I use the database to store those images? And whenever I start the application, just get them and upload it?
Mm-hmm. So there's no way to download an image like that, per se, but what you can do is, combined with the fact that you can store images online, you can store all of your images online, and what you'd actually store in the database is the address of the image. So if you want to access particular images, and you can have thousands of them, if you just store their address or some sort of identifier that you can then change into the full address, like an index number or something, you can actually access however many images you want just by storing the address of them online. When you download these App Inventor
programs? Just like general programs.
So when you download, so the question is, what happens in Android when you download an application to it, or you download application data? And generally what it is, so you download one of these App Inventor files. They're called APK files. Just packages, basically. And for example, this one, it's like a pretty complicated program. It doesn't have much images or text or anything, so I guess it's pretty small, but it's around a megabyte. And that gets stored on your SD card, so you have a gigabyte of space for that kind of stuff. So you won't really run out of that. But in terms of application data, for example, if I'm downloading a lot of images, Android is actually pretty smart at seeing what's actually displayed and seeing what isn't likely to be displayed anytime soon. So if you downloaded an image before and you've actually changed the image, it has really good sort of memory cleaning functions that just automatically in the background get rid of things you don't see anymore. Very rarely will it actually close something that's in view, because that's what you're most likely using at the moment. So if you're using App Inventor, you don't really have to worry about memory too much. And if you have something that's clogging up memory for some reason, remember that Application Task Killer can actually get rid of processes that take up too much memory. Yep. And if we want to break up, we can just demonstrate our apps real quick. So yeah, thanks.